Today at the City Club of Chicago, Jim Riley, Senior Fellow, Metropolitan Planning Commission, and the former Chief Executive Officer of the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority, talked about the third deficit, Illinois' transportation crisis.
Big crowd. Somehow the word must have gotten around that I had $43 billion to pass out. I regret to tell you that that rumor is false, but hopefully we can get there at some point. When I left my full-time job as CEO of the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority, McCormick Place, and handed the reins to the extremely capable hands of Laura Healy, and then responded to Mary Sue Barrett's request that I join the Metropolitan Planning Council as a senior fellow, I began thinking about what in my background and my interests I could pursue that might help move along the great future-oriented civic dialogue in which MPC has always played a role. And it occurred to me that one topic that has not received the attention that it should is the whole area of transportation infrastructure. All my public career has included an interest in that topic, though, of course, my 6 years as chair of the RTA, along with Steve Slickman, who is here in the audience, was totally focused on that. I might say also another person who is here along with Kirk as the chairman is Leanne Redden, and probably the best single thing that Steve and I did when we were at the RTA was bringing Leanne into the fold. She's doing a great job, and between her and Kirk, and she's speaking here tomorrow, so just, you know, digest your lunch and come back tomorrow. It will be good. So along with a great team of people from MPC, we went to work over the past year, and that brings us to today. The meaning of the title, An Honest Conversation, may not be totally obvious. So just a couple of words on that before I get to the substance. The word honest may stick out. It's not that the people who have spoken out on this topic before were not being honest. A lot of many, many barrels of ink and a lot of chatter on the internet came from all the agencies, all the transportation agencies, talking about how bad things are and how fast they're getting worse. But naturally, everyone has spoken and written about their own particular problems in their own time frame. What no one has done until now is put together a solidly researched number that exposes the need for all modes. It's in that sense that we use the word honest. The other word that may stand out is conversation. What we are about is trying to start a great civic conversation about Illinois' third crisis, the transportation infrastructure, in much the same way that the Civic Federation has started a conversation and pursued a conversation about the state's fiscal crisis and the state's pension crisis. Everyone knows that Illinois is a fiscal wreck. Not everyone knows that Illinois is rapidly becoming a physical wreck. And that's why we're here. We picked the City Club to start this conversation because of its diverse audience. To succeed, we need all of you, your businesses and organizations, to join with us in carrying this message. I'm assuming that everyone here has something that comes to mind immediately when they think of transportation problems. You're late to a critical meeting. You missed your daughter's piano recital because your train was delayed by signal problems. All these things are frustrating because so many of the delays are avoidable mechanical failures. Things are getting old. Not just sort of old, but really far beyond the intended lifespan. This museum piece, incidentally, is not in a museum. It's from 1932. That's the year the Lindbergh baby was kidnapped. That's the year FDR was first elected president. And the kicker is that it's still in use daily by Metra to control a junction near Grand and Western. 348 trains every day rely on this relic. Delays due in part to failures of equipment like this cost Metro commuters 800,000 hours of delays every year. And this is just one sore spot in our system. There are many others. And of course, it's also true when you're on the road. There are more and more potholes than we used to have. One woman we talked to when we did a statewide survey, Andrea from Peoria, hit a really bad pothole. It cost $800 to fix her car. So these are the personal effects. Now take those and multiply them by 12 million people in the state and think about each and every business in the state. You can't name one that doesn't rely on a well-functioning transportation network. And to some, it's downright critical. Ask in the United Parcel Service. Their largest ground sorting facility in the nation is in Illinois. And they told us the effect and costs of poor infrastructure are staggering. If UPS drivers just get delayed by 5 minutes a day, and that's nothing in the Chicago area, if they just get delayed by 5 minutes a day, that costs UPS as much as $105 million every year. So you can start to imagine how our lack of investment in transportation is seriously hurting our state's economy, our job growth, and our everyday lives, which is quite important, too. So how did we get here? Well, we failed to invest. A major source of funding, the gas tax, was last raised 25 years ago and has been fixed at 19 cents per gallon ever since. With inflation, that 19 cents per gallon now buys 40% less than it did in 1991. Remember where you were in 1991? That's the first time these guys won the championship. Think of how much your tickets to a game cost in 1991. Then think of what condition the United Center would be in if the ticket price hadn't increased since 1991. Of course, Jerry would never allow that, so we don't need to worry about that. You can't name anything today that doesn't cost a lot more than it did in 1991. I have a more personal reason to remember 1991. That was when, Veronica's here somewhere, that was when Veronica and I got married. And the ensuing 25 years have been enormously great personally, and for the most part with the Bulls, although it would be nice if they could manage to stay healthy for the next couple of weeks, but not so much for transportation. So with the gas tax stuck at 19 cents per gallon and buying 40% less than it did in 1991, coupled with the fact that people are using less gas because their cars are more efficient, a very predictable thing happened to the amount of gas tax that you and I pay. The average person paid in constant dollars $150 in gas taxes every year in 1991. Now, in constant dollars, the average is down to under $100. That's the blue line. And naturally, this has led to less state investment. That's the orange line. In 1991, 13% of the entire state's budget went to transportation. Now it's down to about 8%. As a consequence, the condition of our roads and transit has gotten worse. 90% of a state of good repair is the industry benchmark. And we were able to maintain that more or less with some up and downs until about 2010. But by 2015, our roads were down to less than 80%. That means that one out of every five roads is not in a good shape, needs work, and many bridges are in the same kind of situation. The RTA system is only two-thirds state of good repair. If we continue this trend, we'll be down to nearly 60%. We'll be down to 60% in 5 years. That means 2 in 5 miles of roads are not in good shape, and down to 50% shortly thereafter. But if we start today, and I say if we start today, we can get back on the path to that 90% target. What would it take to get back on that 90% target? Well, for the first time, we have a number, $43 billion. For the first time, we have that number. That's the size of our transportation deficit. That's what it would take to get back to a state of good repair. Now, that's unquestionably a significant goal, but as I hope to just demonstrate, it is an achievable one. How do we meet this deficit? Well, one way would be to raise $2.7 billion in new revenue every year, $27 billion over 10 years, using some of it to service $25 billion in bonds and the remaining $18 billion in pay-as-you-go. We could fund the $43 billion over 10 years. And after the 10 years, still have $1 billion a year left over for pay-go. And this is in addition, of course, to the resources we already have. How did we come up with that number? We didn't just make it up. We talked to road and transit agencies around the state, put all of their numbers on the same timeline, the same scale. Most of it is for maintenance of existing assets, fix it first. But we also figure for a limited number of new projects to accommodate growth in our economy and our population. The total is $43 billion over 10 years. Again, that's existing, that's new investment on top of our existing funding levels. And remember, this is not a made-up number. It's based on a study of each of the agencies. How can we get enough revenue each? How can we get enough revenue each year? Well, there's more than one way, but a simple way, or at least to illustrate the scale with two traditional sources. If you add 30 cents to the gas tax, that may be a lot, but keep in mind it hasn't been increased since 91. If you add 30 cents to the gas tax and increase vehicle registration fees across the board, you get the total that we need. Again, you can't name anything that costs the same today as it did in 1991. Why should the gas tax be different? Both need to be indexed to grow with inflation. If we had indexed in 1991 with inflation, we wouldn't be in this problem in the first place. This is the scale of what we need to do. Anything less is insufficient. Anything less is simply a fairy tale. This is what we need to do if we're going to make progress. The additional gas tax and the increase in registration fees would cost the average person $147 each year. To put this in context, the typical driver in the city of Chicago currently spends nearly $2,000 for insurance, repairs, gas, registration, license fees, and motor fuel taxes. At a household level, the Center for Neighborhood Technology says the average household spends just over $10,000 on transportation annually. If you stop to think about it, what we're saying is that for the monthly cost equivalent of one takeout lunch from McDonald's or a Netflix subscription, Illinois can have bridges, roads, and transit that actually works. Let me repeat that because it's worth thinking about. For the monthly cost of one takeout lunch or a Netflix subscription, Illinois can have bridges, roads, and transit that actually work. If we go back to the hidden costs we're paying now, that $147 a year begins to sound cheap. Remember Andrea's $800 pothole? That really isn't an outlier. The American Society of Civil Engineers estimates people in Illinois spend an extra $3.7 billion every year on car repairs from poor roads. That's above and beyond the normal maintenance costs. That's an extra $450 for every driver in the state. Think how much that must cost the CTA, Metra, Pace, and IDOT to repair their highways, buses, and trains, or the United Parcel Service to repair their delivery trucks. What about the cost of lost time? People in Chicagoland lose something like 114 hours every year sitting in congestion. We can't eliminate congestion, but we can certainly improve it. Better road maintenance, and more and better transit. How much does that lost time cost you, your business? What is it costing our state? A few years ago, an MPC study pegged the cost of congestion in the Chicago region alone at $7.3 billion a year. So when you look at this, you see clearly that, in short, we're already spending a lot more than $4.3 billion a year in various ways and getting nothing for it. Not only not getting anything for it, but it's getting worse. If we get smart and fix the problem by making a real investment, we will pay much less and get better roads, better, safer roads, and better transit, as well as a better economy and a better quality of life. So we can invest $43 billion and get something like $110 billion, 250% profit in return. If somebody offered you even a 100% profit in return, would you take it? I certainly would. Heck, from what the market has done since January 1st, I'd take a 5%. Finally, the last few days, the market's come back. Illinois' central location is why people settled here in the first place. Why there is an Illinois, why there is a Chicago. Because when there weren't roads and there weren't railroads, the only way to travel around the central part of what turned out to be the United States was to use the river systems in the Great Lakes. And so that naturally made this a kind of crossroads. Our leaders, 100, even 150 years ago, recognized that Illinois' location gave it a strategic advantage as a transportation node and invested in the infrastructure necessary to support that goal. We are the hub at the center of the nation. All of the spokes radiate outward from Illinois. Investing in transportation gave us an economic advantage. That was true 100 years ago, and it's true today. A quarter of all freight rail traffic passes through Chicago. Logistics, distribution warehouses, shippers. A quarter of all jobs in the Chicago region, let me repeat that, a quarter of all jobs in the Chicago region are related to this. We risk squandering that advantage. We're already losing business to neighboring states that are making these investments. All of this was bequeathed to us by past generations of leaders. Are we less wise than they were? So that's that. Illinois faces a physical crisis in transportation every bit as tragic as our fiscal crisis. We can't wait. We need to act and act now. Illinois used to be a leader in transportation. Have we lost the ability to lead? We need to get back to that. The phrase kicking the can down the road has been used so often concerning the fiscal crisis that it's become something of a cliche. But it's still an apt description of exactly what we've been doing for years, which is what got us into this mess in the first place. Every year that the state hasn't acted to shore up our infrastructure, or almost worse, has passed some meager, totally inadequate capital bill and pretended that the problem was solved, the problem has gotten worse. The slide from 90% of state good repair to 70 to 60 and just over the horizon to 50% has been irreversible. Every year that goes by, the cost of catching up, not to mention the cost of improving our system, increases exponentially. Every year that goes by with a deteriorating transportation system costs us jobs, hurts the economy, and perhaps more importantly, lowers the quality of life in Illinois. Some would say that the numbers I have presented are scary, but what really should scare you is what happens if we don't act. To return to where I began, we are today trying to start a great civic conversation by presenting a significant but achievable goal. But MPC can't even begin to do the whole job. All of you, the organizations and businesses that you are part of, and the other major civic organizations have to join in. The top line message is that we desperately need to invest $43 billion in additional transportation resources over the next 10 years. We need to convince the powers that be of that number, of that need, of this crisis. But if we remain silent, nothing will happen, because it is always easier to do nothing than to act. Please join us in this civic conversation. Let your voices be heard. Let's see to it that 2016 is the beginning of the renaissance of the magnificent transportation infrastructure that made Illinois and its economy great. Thank you.
So I'll start with this one. Suzanne Melick McKenna. Why can't we institutionalize avoided cost investments? Is it just that it's not politically beneficial to invest in benefits seen as past an election cycle? Susan, am I giving you, where is she?
Pretty close.
I'm pretty close.
Clearly there are savings in investing in things that will keep us from having so much damage. Why is that not happening
at a political level? Jim, can you repeat it? Yeah, the question is, there's obviously savings to be had if we make these kind of investments. So why isn't it happening? It's a wonderful question. I think it's partly, there used to be a great understanding, even among the more conservative Republicans, for example. It used to be a real understanding of the difference between investing and spending. With spending, there are a lot of great things we need to spend on, but investing actually produces a return. You get something back when you invest, and somehow that distinction, I think, has been lost. That's part of it. You know, we've gotten into this. We've gotten in, even as a nation, I think, to this mantra that we want everything, but we don't want to pay for anything, and somehow that attitude has to change.
This next question is from Michael Weiser. Michael, where are you in the room? Okay. Commuter cars. In what ways is MPC encouraging innovation? As it says, if you want a different resolution, you have to do something different.
Well, MPC has been doing a lot of things including pushing mass transit, including the new effort on the Stevenson to have lanes that would decrease congestion. I'm not as familiar with the commuter cars, and I'm sure you would be glad to enlighten us on that. But I must admit I'm not totally familiar with that. But a lot of things have to be done. And at the end of the day, while we've talked about a gas tax, and I think that's the most likely source for the next 10 years or so. The other fact is that at some point we're going to have to switch to a different funding source because cars are getting more efficient, and so at some point we're going to have to switch to what's called vehicle miles traveled, which is a good way of if you want to talk about a user fee, it's really how many miles you travel. You buy a Prius, and you don't use as much gas as somebody, but you may, I'm just making this up, you might drive the Prius 10,000 miles, and somebody else, or you might drive the Prius 50,000 miles, and somebody else with a bigger car may use as much gas, but don't do nearly the damage to the roads that 50,000 miles might do. So there are a lot of things that need to be done.
So many good questions. So there are two questions from the Trib op-ed. How big is prevailing wage from Governor Rauner's claims? This is from John McCarron. Are you here?
Hey, John.
Great.
Just named the new editor of the editorial page.
See, that's why he's here and I'm just missing. And the other one, if you want to tag it on, I'm given Sunday's Tribune Report, and this comes from... Now, you know, Dr. Green wouldn't take this question because it's not signed. You know him, too, don't you?
Yes.
Yes, he figured as much. Okay, so it says, given Sunday's Tribune Report, is shrinking family income and wealth, how likely is that political...
How much political will is there for any kind of increase?
Got that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In terms of the prevailing wage, I don't have a good sense of how much... that impacts, and I promised myself that I wasn't going to get involved in discussions of what's going on in Springfield, because I'm here to deliver a message, open some conversation about transportation. But honestly, I don't know, John, how much of that would be saved if we weren't paying prevailing wage. My guess is in the Chicagoland area, not much, because all the contractors in the Chicagoland area are union contractors anyway. But that's as I say, I don't know. In terms of how much oomph there will be to do something like this, I don't know. A lot of that will depend on how many organizations, how many people, how many businesses join with us. But also, historically at least, whenever the state has had to raise revenues generally, and I'm not going to get into that issue, but whenever the state has had to raise revenue generally, they've also done a capital bill at the same time, frankly, because it gives legislators something they can sort of take home and say, hey, yeah, I had to vote for X, Y, and Z to balance the budget, but here's something good that's going to happen locally. So my guess is, of course it won't happen until it all happens, but I'm pretty sure that if and when there is a break in the logjam, I'm pretty sure that it will include a capital bill. The issue is, and the issue we're fighting with is, we can't let them get by, we've got to try not to let them get by with an inadequate capital bill, because what happens is when they pass a capital bill that only has a couple billion, which may sound, you know, like contradictory, but it only has a couple billion, you're actually worse off at the end of the, it takes to spend the couple of billion, because everything keeps wearing out as you go along anyway. Nothing stops. You're actually further down the path towards 50% after you have the $2 billion. And so if they're going to do it, let them do it right. That's, I think, got to be sort of our mantra here. At least ours.
We've got a couple of really good ones. All the questions are so great today. But this one's very interesting. Clint Sabin, are you here? Obviously, you're here because you wrote the question. Oh, he's way in the back there. It's from Sabin Public Affairs. He says, what can we do? Are you talking just the general public or talking about Sabin? I'm just checking, you know, to see if you're trying to get a plug in there. Yeah.
Well, in some ways, I regard this as sort of like what had to happen with the O'Hare modernization. It's a different issue altogether in one sense. But what happened then was that all the civic groups, all the business leaders, all the labor leaders got together and said, by God, this has to happen. And they said it in a way that the political leaders couldn't ignore. And I'm not saying they wanted to ignore it either. So that's sort of what we're talking about here. We're starting this conversation, but we want the other organizations, we want all the businesses. I'm sure labor will be with us. I'm sure a lot of groups will be with us. But we just really need to hit home on the fact that this needs to be done. It needs to be done in an adequate level. Frankly, and I think Kirk would probably agree with this and other potential legislators, if something comes up, something like this is only going to happen if the four leaders and the governor agree that it should happen. That's, you know, sort of a given. But if they do, and I'm a legislator, if you vote for a gas tax increase, some people in your district are going to be mad at you no matter what. But whether you vote for 5 cents that doesn't mean much or vote for 30 cents that actually gets the job done, won't matter. I mean, no one's going to lose because of that. Some people may be taking a risk by voting for it at all. But if you're going to vote for it, do something. Don't just put something aside and say, oh, I'm wonderful, I did something.
So I'm going to try to combine several questions together. Except, Bob Israel, I do like this question about the Tesla. Let's see here. Moderator discretion, right? I get to try to mesh some questions. Basically, we've got Linda Soto and Van Schmidtke? No, I just totally tortured that last name. Okay, so that's what it's going to be because you didn't say your last name. And Thomas McElroy is asking about CDOT, but we have quite a few questions here just talking about funding, you know, how we're going to get to where you want to get.
Well, theoretically, you could, if you accept, if we can get people to accept the $43 billion in need over 10 years, there are at least theoretically a lot of different revenue sources you could use. My own belief, personally, is that at least for the next few years, the traditional tried and true user fees of gas tax and license plate fees is the most, by far the most likely one. Eventually, and again, just speaking for myself, eventually we need to go to VMT, but that's a very complicated transition to make. The Tesla question is a good one. You didn't ask it, but I'll answer it anyway.
I was getting to it.
The Tesla question is a good one. As more and it follows just as more and more cars are hybrids, then eventually we begin getting into cars that don't use gas at all, which is good for the environment, of course. That's all the more reason why we have to eventually get the VMT, because it doesn't matter why the car or what powers the car. It's how much damage you do to the road, and that will be a critical thing. The other thing that's complicated, you may have to leave the gas tax on because all those other trucks that aren't based in Illinois come in and drive through Illinois. So you and cars and tourists and so on. You may have to leave the gas tax on for a while just so there is, because otherwise if you went totally VMT, you can't send VMT bills to people in other states unless it becomes a nationwide pool.
This is a quick yes or no. Thomas, you were asking if, Thomas McElroy from Level 1, you were asking if CDOT was included in the estimates of the $43 billion?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, well, maybe it said state. I don't know. But yes, their estimate is something like $1 billion a year for 10 years to catch up. And, of course, they have some projects that are newer that deserve to be done. But, yes, they would get something like if you allocate the funds that we have for new projects and add the $10 billion, they would get something like $15 billion. Over the 10 years, and I guarantee they would like that.
So this question comes from Chris Anderson of the Realtors. Okay. If Illinois fails to invest in infrastructure, what neighboring city is poised to take our place as an intermodal hub? Indiana, Milwaukee, St. Louis, or is KC, Kansas City?
Some of each. The freight traffic, and we do have money for what's called CREATE, which is the program to try to unsnarl the freight traffic as it goes through Illinois on rail. Some of it would go south. In fact, probably a lot of it would go south. They would just build a bypass around. Ultimately, they would end up building a bypass around. But keep in mind that we even when they don't spend a lot of time in Illinois, we still get jobs here, and we would lose jobs if that started to happen. But I think some of it would go south, perhaps through St. Louis. Some of it would go north. And a lot of those states are making these kind of infrastructure investments that we need.
I don't know. I think Mr. Riley needs to get back down to Springfield and get some. It's just me. I'm just saying. I think we've had...
No, everybody needs to get back down to
thank you so much, Mr. Riley. I don't think we can say thank you enough for the information shared.